Hi there, and welcome along to this Monday Racing Postcast. We're back. I'm Maddie Plough. This week's guests are Graham Rodway, Tom Collins, and Paul Binfield from Paddy Power. Now, what a festive season we're having. Merry Christmas, one and all. We've had plenty happen, and we're still waiting on so much more, including a cracking Savills Chase and Christmas Hurdle today. So, of course, everything we're going to be talking about is pre those two big events. The big news this morning was that Nicky Henderson's yard's going to go into a short shutdown. That comes after short price defeats from Altior and Epitant, but Shishkin still managed to win okay. We'll talk about all of those three performances and many, many more. There's been grade ones left, right and centre, so we're going to assess how the big races have been impacted. And also, we have another grade one on Tuesday. Well, many actually. One in Britain in the Challow, as well as the Matheson and the Neville's Hotel Novice Chase at Leopardstown. Plus, we have a New Year's Day action at Cheltenham on Friday as well. So it's going to be a jam-packed show. Let's start off with the headline act then, and a horse that everybody absolutely loves, and that is Frodon and Briony Frost. They captured a surprise King George. And how has that altered the Gold Cup picture, Binners?
Well, quite dramatically, actually, Maddie. Frodon was 40-1 going into the race. It was brilliant to see. I'm sure everyone enjoyed it. And he's now into 12-1. And it's interesting. I thought it was interesting, Paul Nicholls' comments about, you know, unlike some of the horses he's won the King George with in the past, Frodon really enjoys Cheltenham. It's his favourite track. And you know, I think he goes there as with a decent chance for a 12-1 shot.
It's ironic, isn't it? Because the race was billed as a big matchup between Clan de Zobo and Surname, and Paul Nicholls' other horse comes along and scoops the win. G-Rod, tactically, I thought it was a really fascinating race. People were criticising the jockeys in behind for giving Briony such an easy time of it. Would you echo that?
Yeah, I would, yeah. I thought it was a bit bizarre, really. I thought there were going to be a big battle on for the lead. I mean, we were on RP Live on the weekend and we were saying, oh, there's loads and loads of pace in this race. Is Surname going to serve it up to him? Obviously, we knew Frodon was going to go from the front. Plus, there were a bunch of others. But I reckon what happened was all the jockeys sat there and went, oh, I don't want to be getting into an absolute war from an early stage in this race. We'll just sit and take a pull and see how it goes. And in the end, they all ended up sitting and taking a pull. And Briony was allowed to dictate it on Frodon. And after about four fences, I was fairly certain that either Frodon was either going to win or go very close to winning, because once Briony and Frodon get into that superb jumping rhythm, they're just as one, aren't they, as a team. And they just are able to dominate races from the front in the way that he did there. Yes, I think that, take nothing away from the winner, Frodon was very, very good. He's a very smart performer on his day. We absolutely love him. Tough and genuine, jumps well. He was definitely gifted a bit of a tactical advantage by the other jockeys.
Okay, TC, I thought it was a bizarre ride on waiting patiently, although I could understand it slightly from Brian Hughes. He ran a cracker off such a long layoff to finish second. Clan de Zobo eventually getting third, the likes of Santini. We knew it wouldn't be his track. What was your main point to take out of the race, do you think? St. Calvados, he was another. He ran well for a long way, but didn't seem to get home.
Yeah, I think it was more a race of disappointments rather than horses that, you know, caught the eye in defeat. Obviously, Waiting Patiently flew home up the run-in. That was a good reappearance, but he's always ridden out of the back. And, you know, when Frodon's allowed an easy lead like that, Frodon's now amassed 934,000 in prize money, I should say. I mean, what a horse he's been for Paul Nicholls. But when he's allowed an easy lead out in front, he's just going to prove impossible to catch, especially when Waiting Patiently is giving him a 15-length head start. The likes of Clan de Zobo didn't jump a fence on the first circuit, did he? Not one. Lost in Translation didn't perform again. Surname was reportedly never travelling, although he seemed to be going all right, I thought, until he made a mistake down the back and then he was sharply pulled up. I thought the tactics on him were strange. I thought he would go out in front, but maybe it was, team tactics with Paul Nicholls wanting Frodon to get into the rhythm and thinking that Surname could be able to stalk the pace and still come through and win. That wasn't the case in the end. I don't know. I thought it was a bit of a disappointing race from a punting perspective. I didn't think many were given a chance. And I think the Irish still have a stranglehold on the division in the Gold Cup. The likes of Albion Photo, Manella Indo, Delta Work, both of whom we're yet to see today. Of course, they could dramatically shorten if one of them's to win easily, presenting Percy. I think the Brits were a bit disappointing in that race, though. Don't take anything away from Frodon. Like G-Rod said, it was a great performance. Though he didn't even have to run to his best to win. He achieved an RPR, race post rating of 172. His best is 177, yet he won the biggest race of his career so far.
You've got to say, Maddie, that it's absolutely criminal that waiting patiently has only ever won one grade one in his career. I mean, the horse of waiting patiently is talent. I mean, he should have been a multiple grade one winner, in my opinion. He's been poorly handled all the way through his career since he won that race a couple of years ago when he beat Q-Card. In February, was it 2018, he won the Betfair Chase beating Q-Card. I mean, he should have gone to the Cheltenham Festival that year. He would have absolutely sluiced up in the Ryanair Chase that was won by a horse called Belco de Flow or something. I mean, Belco de Flow wasn't even fit to lace his boot. And instead, the trainer decided that she was going to wait till Aintree that year, and then as it was, sadly, waiting patiently never made it to Aintree because he picked up an injury. And you know what? He hasn't won a race since. Well, it's just been a complete disaster. I mean, that horse has got all the talent in the world and should have won multiple grade ones. And again, like TC said, strange ride, wasn't it? I mean, surely waiting patiently must have gone very close to winning had he been a bit closer to the pace.
Yeah, I've heard reports that Ruth Jefferson was a bit frustrated after the race as well. But I think, I don't know if you're being a bit unfair there, G-Rod, because he's clearly a very fragile horse. And I think it was a brilliant performance to get him that close after such a, you know, so many issues. And as you say, he's finished second in a Tingle Creek, hasn't he? Or close up in one anyway. But that's the Gold Cup picture. Let's move on to the Champion Chase picture. Cheltenham, okay, it's not the be-all and end-all, but that is likely where we're going to see the likes of Chacon Pourcoir next. And he was so impressive at Leopardstown. I'm not sure I'm sold on this horse as some people are, TC. Do you think he's going to take all the beating in the Champion Chase now?
Chacon Pourcoir? Yeah, I do. I really do. I think he's superb. He just doesn't stop winning, this horse. And he's obviously with the main trainer, Willie Mullins. And that division, who's going to beat him, Maddie? If you're not sold on him, I just don't know who's going to beat him.
Yeah, good question. Good question. I haven't decided just yet. There's something about the way he finishes his races. I think he gives the impression he's very tired. And I worry about him going up that hill at Cheltenham. I'm just not quite sure. G-Rod, do you see where I'm coming from? Or am I seeing something that's not there?
I know what you're saying. And I do think that he doesn't always look the strongest of finishers. But the problem is that he might well have everything shot to bits by the time they reach the hill, because he has got a really, really good cruising speed, hasn't he, Chacon Pourcoir? He goes through his races like an absolute top-class performer. And he had them all in trouble, didn't he, coming off the home bend. And he was still hard on the bridle while the rest of them were struggling. And, I think we saw Elty or getting beaten by Nubi Negra. I don't think Nubi Negra is the strongest of finishers. And I think that if Nubi Negra had got into the trenches with Altior, there would have only been one winner. But as it was, Nubi Negra is such a strong traveller and goes so well through his races that Altior was not really able to lay a glove on him. And I could just see a similar thing happening in the Champion Chase, where Chacon Pourcoir will just be travelling so well coming to the final fence that he might still well be on the bridle. If he gets over the last with him still hard on the steel, it won't matter whether he comes up the hill or not. He might well come up the hill on the bridle. I mean, I think he's that good. He could win a Champion Chase on the bit.
Wow. Two bold endorsements for Chacon Pourcoir there then. And I'm glad G-Rod introduced Altior's defeat and Nubi Negra's win in the Desert Orchid Chase into the conversation, as that's what we're going to talk about next. But before we do, Paul Boomfield, what price did you go for Altior in the Champion Chase and indeed Chacon Pourcoir?
Well, Maddie, we put a doubled Altior's price to 12 to 1 after you have to say it was a disappointment yesterday. And Shakun Puswar, we went 7 to 4 favourite from 11 to 4 favourite after he won the Paddy's Rewards Club chase. Then when Altior got beaten, we hardened him into even greater favouritism at 11 to 8 favourite for the champion chase. I was delighted that he won. I spoke last week about my press release. I didn't manage to get past the gatekeeper, Joe Chambers, to Rich Ritchie, but Joe Chambers himself was a pleasure to deal with, very helpful, and I was delighted for him and connections that the horse proved what they've said about him all along.
Yes, and what next for Altior then? Some people keen to write him off. I'm not so sure, but there's no two ways about it. This was disappointing, G-Rod. Do you think that's it for him now, or are you willing to give him another chance at the very top level?
Well, yeah, I mean, he's been on the wane for quite a while, hasn't he? But that hasn't stopped him winning races because, essentially, he's just around at a time when there's a bunch of very average two-mile chasers in Britain. So he's been able to run a fair way below his best, probably, in my opinion, since his last champion chase win, really. I mean, I think he's been well below his best for the last 2 years. I think the last time we saw Altior at his absolute peak was back in 2018. But nevertheless, he's still been racking up the victories because there's just nothing else in Britain that can put it up to him. Let's be honest, right? If Nubi Negra hadn't turned up for this race, say Nubi Negra had been a late non-runner, right? Everyone would be saying, oh, well, that's another victory for Altior, you know, full steam ahead for the champion chase. You know, yes, he made hard work of it, but he'll come on for the run and, you know, he'll be much better also at Cheltenham. You know, he's still... I thought he was well below his best. I mean, he was being pushed along after about three fences, wasn't he? He just looked dead slow. I mean, he's still a tough, genuine, really, really likable character who gives you his all, but he just isn't the horse he was, I'm afraid.
Maybe the dirty scope had something to do with it. I mentioned at the top of the show, Nicky Henderson's going to have an easy time with his yard after his runners today. Epiton, another short price defeat. I don't think anyone was expecting her to bomb out in the Christmas hurdle, but it was the Bonnie Silver Streak. I love this horse. I think we all do. And the Fractions, Adam Wedge, got them absolutely spot on and he came home on his own. We'll wait and see if Epiton anything emerges, whether she was in season or there's something indeed wrong with the yard. But how did you analyse this as a race, TC? Did you always think Epiton was going to pick up the leader? Because she didn't seem to jump or travel with her usual zest.
Yeah, but based on that that fighting fifth victory where we saw Epiton fly after the last under tender handling, picked up like I've never seen before in a hurdle race, especially in the fighting fifth like that, it was incredible finishing effort from Epiton that day. I was just expecting her to breeze past Silver Streak. I mean, she was put in the perfect position by Ed and Coleman. She was two lengths off coming around the bend, maybe three lengths off coming around the bend, and she had every chance. She just didn't show the same turn of foot that we saw at Newcastle. And Silver Streak actually increased the advantage. I mean, he was never further ahead than 6.5 lengths, which was the eventual winning margin. Epiton beat Silver Streak in that race last year by 5 lengths. Maybe the mixture of the new tactics for Silver Streak, obviously allowed to bowl along out in front, and the fact that Epiton wasn't at her best, as you say, maybe it's something to do with the yard form, something in the yard. I'm not too sure, but you would think that on a normal day, granted a faster gallop, a bigger field at Cheltenham in the champion hurdle, that Epiton will reverse that form. But it was a great day for Evan Williams, Adam Wedge, Silver Streak. You know, they deserve wins like this. I mean, Evan Williams does such a good job. I know you're a big fan. He does such a good job with his horses, doesn't he? And he's probably got a good chance of winning the Challo this week as well, which I'm sure we'll come to later.
We will come to it later, and we'll also hopefully give a mention to the Matheson hurdle, where we're going to see Abacadabra, Semoir, Aspire Tower, Sol de Sharjah. So that's going to impact the champion hurdle market as well. Let's move on to a magnificent jumping performance in the Quarto Star Novices Chase that came courtesy of Shan Blue, who beat the big breakaway. And I mean, Dan and Harry Skelton are just in rip-roaring form at the moment. They've had, as well as Nubi Negra, this horse, you know, handicap winners, you name it. Now, do we think the RSA is the right, or what was previously, apologies, known as the RSA, do we think that's the right step for this horse, G-Rod? Because some people think that the big breakaway will reverse the form on a more galloping track.
Yeah, not according to Dan Skelton, is it? Dan Skelton said he's not 100% sure he wants to run in the RSA because for him...
I can understand that.
Yeah, not everything's about Cheltenham, he says, which in many ways I do agree with him on that point. He thinks the horse really is... He's not a dour stayer. He's got a bit more speed about him and he doesn't want to bottom him out in the RSA. I can completely see that. In fact, I'll be surprised if he does show up for the RSA. I'm not entirely sold on the form, really. The big breakaway's obviously got loads and loads of ability. But let's be honest, he pretty much belted every fence out of the way. And he doesn't look a straightforward character. But yet he's still able to get fairly close to Shamblue. Obviously, pure visual impressions would give you the idea that Shamblue was well on top because he did jump very well. And he does look a very smart jumper, take nothing away from him. But... you know, visual impressions can be deceiving. I mean, we were just talking about Epitome, weren't we? And, I mean, purely from a visual perspective, a lot of people would have said that that the fighting fifth hurdle was one of her best performances. But purely on racing post ratings, she only got an RPR of 154 for that victory in the fighting fifth. And according to racing post ratings, she runs a 155 when she was second to Silver Streak. So according to the RPR team, Epitome actually improved from her run in the fighting fifth when she was beaten by Silver Streak. So sometimes I feel you can be blown away by visual impressions when sometimes the actual strength of the form is not always that good.
That's interesting. Let's talk about strength of form when it comes to a different division, and that's going to be the Triumph Hurdle. Zanahir, did he enhance his claims in the Grade 2 at Leopardstown? I was more impressed by his win last time, I've got to be honest, Binnis, but I presume you shortened him at the top of the market.
Yes, indeed, Maddie. Yeah, no, we were mightily impressed. He was already 4 favourite for the race beforehand. He was 3-1 favourite immediately afterwards. David Jennings of your team opined to me that that wouldn't last long. Well, it did last all of Saturday, but then on Sunday we cut him again into 11-4 favourite. A stable companion, Quixlios, was, you know, one of the leading horses that might face up to him in March. But since then, we've also seen French Asile, who we might come on to in a minute, and he's gone into second favourite now for El Marie Holden after his winner Leopardstown yesterday at 10-1.
You read my mind there. I love the performance of Francis Seal. And we've also got to bring in Heros de Soy, who won at Kempton as well. How much do any of them need to improve to get to Zanahir's level, TC?
Well, Zanahir's, I think he's a real monster. I mean, he deserves to be the clear favourite at the top of the Triumph Hurdle market based on what we've seen so far. He's proved that he can quicken off a slow gallop, which we saw on Boxing Day. I mean, they went an absolute crawl out in front. The leader, the Joseph O'Brien trained runner-up, I can't remember his name at the moment, but he ran a very nice race. They went slowly from the outset and he had the run of it out in front. But Zanahir still managed to cruise up onto his shoulder and he looked a talented horse, the runner-up. And Zanahir cruised up onto his shoulder and quick and clear. The time before, you said, was more impressive. Well, visually, yes. I mean, they went a quicker gallop and there was that close-up camera image, wasn't there? Just as he quickened. And it looked like he was putting length between him and the second and the third that day because they chased a clear leader. They went much quicker and he never really looked in any danger on both starts. He's the proven quantity in the race and he looks the one to be on. Well, if you're getting rid of prices at this stage, he looks the most likely winner of the Triumph. Though it is interesting that Jack Kennedy, who rode Zanahir, said after the race that he thinks there isn't much split in him and Quixlios, who's also trained by Gordon Elliott. I think he's 10-1 or 12-1, Quixlios. So it'll be interesting to see what happens if Quixlios runs again before the festival. The disparity in the price doesn't seem to match Kennedy's assessment, though it is fair to say he did say Zanahir is potentially a little bit better.
Okay, two other Irish Grade Ones to talk about. Franco Deport was a surprise winner of the Racing Post Novice Chase, and Cole Reeby won the Grade One Novice Chase at Limerick. Which of those were you most impressed by, G-Rod?
I think Cole Reavy did it quite nicely, really. She's a mare, isn't she? So she running the new mares race.
I think that's the plan, yeah.
Cheltenham, I mean, she's going to be going into that, fairly warm favourite. I would say it wouldn't surprise me anyway if she turned up a fairly warm favourite. The one thing you can guarantee about mares races at Cheltenham Festival is that they're probably going to be won by either Willie Mullins or Nicky Henderson, because they tend to have all the best mares, don't they?
Are you a fan of that mares race? What do you think?
What do you think?
I think maybe not. Anyway, we'll leave that for another time, and we will take a quick pause now, but plenty more to come. Shishkin, appreciate it, and much, much more. Stay with us.
Here at Paddy Power, we want our gambling to be fun and encourage our customers to bet responsibly. That's why we offer a number of tools to help you stay in control, including the ability to set deposit limits, get reminders after a certain amount of time playing, and to take breaks. For more information, visit responsiblegaming.paddypower.com. 18+, begambleaware.org.
Welcome back. We're going to zoom on over back to Kempton now and talk about one of the most exciting horses in training in Shishkin. He made it 2 from 2 over fences. It was another fairly faultless win at Kempton, although maybe if one were quibbling, you would say he wasn't quite as slick over his fences this time around. Do you think anything can beat him in the Arkle, G Rod? I know often you come on this show and you like to take on these horses. Is he one that you can see being beaten in that race?
Yeah, I can definitely see him beaten, yeah. I obviously just generally like to take on favourites, no matter how good they look. I took Epitant on the weekend and was come up trumps there. Everyone laughed at me and said, how can you possibly make a case against her? But, you know, sometimes these horses, they get overhyped. However, yeah, there's no doubt about it. Shishkin does look the real deal. According to RPRs, that was a big career best on the weekend when he thrashed Tamarok de Matan by 13 lengths. And I thought there was quite a lot to like about the performance, really, because I thought that he was not really jumping with the same fluency that he had done first time up early in the race. To my eye, he seemed to be going out a little bit to his left. And there are a few little niggles in behind by Nico de Boinville. And for a little while, I thought he might get beat. I mean, again, I took him on. I laid him at, I think he was 1.3 or whatever. Just in the hope that he might have been overhyped, and on that first run. And I was quite hopeful early in the race. But then once he got into top gear and he got down that side of the track.
Where do you think he's vulnerable going forward? What are the chinks in his armour?
I'm not sure there are any at the moment.
But you're still going to take him on.
Yeah, I mean, I will be taking him on no matter where he goes, probably. But if you look, there's no obvious reason as to why he should get beat, is there, or purely on form. But sometimes there can be no obvious reasons why horses get beat, and then they do, as we saw on the weekend with the hot favourites getting turned over there. They're just not machines, are they? Sometimes they do throw in the odd poor run here and there. Really, if you are taking her on, that is what you're looking for. But if you were to take him on at Cheltenham, for example, I suppose maybe that early part of the race might be the bit where you were looking to. Early in the race, maybe he wasn't quite as fluent as he had been on his debut. Maybe Nico did have to niggle him to get into the race, but you've got to say that once he got into the race and once he got up alongside that leader, nothing could live with him. He finishes so well, doesn't he? He reminds me a little bit of Altior, really, in the way that once he hits that top gear, he's hard to get out of that top gear. He's going to be very hard to beat, but I'll be trying to get him beat, Maddie.
We can put money on that. Shishkin, I definitely agree with you. I echo those thoughts. He reminds me of Altior in the way that he slightly sometimes races behind the bridle, but when he's asked, that finishing kick is just incredible, isn't it? And another horse who I know Tom Collins has always been a big fan of, let's move on to now, go into the novice hurdling division, is Appreciate It. TC, you were gutted when this horse couldn't win the champion bumper last year, but could he make up for it in the Supreme?
I think Appreciate can make up in Supreme. I'm really excited by him, much like Shishkin as well. That they're two of the top five most exciting horses in Britain and Ireland, I think, at this stage in proceedings. As you said, in the Champion Bumper last year, I was all over Appreciate It. I know it was a short price. I think it was 15-8 that day in a huge field. And he got chinned by Fernie Hollow. But that horse, Fernie Hollow, the stable companion, I know he's been ruled out for this season, but he was considered one of the top leading prospects in the Willie Mullins yard. And Appreciate It's done nothing wrong in two hurdling starts this campaign. He beat Master McShee in a Cork maiden hurdle to kick off the year. He was sent up at 1-12 that day, but the runner-up's done wonders for the form. He looks a really smart horse. And then in the Dublin Racing Festival, Appreciate It the other day, blistering in a nine length success. He apparently surprised Willie Mullins. And to surprise Willie Mullins, it must take something quite special, especially given he knows all of his horses inside and out, and he's got about 200 to 250 in his string. So I think Appreciate It's a really exciting horse. And just to go back on Shishkin, I know G-Rod said that he jumped a bit tardily early on. I mean, I think that was probably due to the fact that it was a small field and that he took a keen hold early, and maybe he's better suited to bigger fields, faster early gallops, because in the straight, I thought three out and two out, he was brilliant. And at the last, when he was in full gear, he was on the wrong stride, wasn't he? He looked briefly like he might go through the fence, plow through it. But he was really sharp, and he kind of popped over it efficiently. I think he's really exciting, Shishkin. I like taking on favourites, much like you, probably not as much as you do, definitely not as much as you do, but he is one that I would not be opposed, and I think he's potentially a monster, Shishkin.
And we can potentially mark up that performance due to the Henderson's yards, you know, their form. And Appreciate It. They do say, don't they, you need to stay to win a Supreme, even less so than the Ballymore, which on face value seems a very odd theory. But with the way race is run, I can buy into that.
I don't buy this Henderson form argument at all, Maddie. I don't get it at all. I don't see anything wrong with a stable form. I'm just looking through Henderson's runners in the last couple of weeks. I mean, he's operating at 23% strike rate, 8 winners from 35 runners. Three of his last 6 horses have won. Epperton apparently run £1 better than she did at Newcastle when she finished second to Silver Streak, according to Racing Post ratings. And Altior only run £3 below but the form that he showed when he won the Game Spirit race last season, according to Racing Post ratings. Don't buy this Henderson form. To my eye, he strings in cracking form. I mean, he had a 25-1 winner on Boxing Day at Kempton called Monte Cristo. I mean, does that snack you ever have stabled at Scott Problem?
It's an interesting one, isn't it? I think he had Chantry House run a poor race, and then Caribbean Boy as well. He was not very good at Ascot, wasn't he? And if he's scoping these horses and saying that they're not clear, then it's easy to understand why you might think some of them aren't performing. It doesn't necessarily always have to refer to the whole yard. Maybe it could just be a section of it. But they're interesting stats, actually. And as you say, the strike rate is quite positive. One combination who are in electric form, as you'd expect, is Paul Townend and Willie Mullins. And they snared the big Paddy Power chase with Castleborn West just yesterday. This was an incredible performance to watch. Bobby Joe next for Castleborn West. Do you think this was the case of a graded horse in a handicapper, G-Rod?
Not really. No, I thought that there was a bit of the Frodon about it. I thought it was a strange race in that everyone thought it was going to be a bonkers pace because there was loads and loads of runners in the race. But as it was, after about 3 or 4 fences, Paul Townend probably couldn't believe his luck. I mean, he was just being gifted what looked like the softest of soft leads in a huge field handicap. And let's be fair, Paul Townend, pretty much the best jockey around now. He was always going to be very, very difficult to beat once he was allowed to dictate the pace as he did. And coming off the home bend, he still had loads left in the tank because he just hadn't been taken on for the lead. I just thought he took advantage of a real tactical advantage that he got there. An excellent ride, nevertheless. And he's been riding fantastically this Christmas festival, hasn't he, Paul Townend? From the front, from the back, it doesn't matter. When it comes to these big meetings, he really does come to the party, doesn't he? And, I thought it was a great ride by Paul Townend, but not such great stuff from those in behind.
Okay, I know he already rode a winner before we signed on to do this podcast. What about some horses for the tracker then? There's so many that we haven't mentioned that we could have done. You know, Royal Pagal, he absolutely bolted up in our handicap chase at Kempton yesterday. Cadzand, also very impressive. But so many more, and indeed from Boxing Day or St. Stephen's Day itself. TC, who would you nominate? What do you think is a good horse for punters to follow next time?
Well, there's two. The first one is my namesake, Collins, who ran in the bumper. I think it was at Leopardstown. Let me just double check. Yes, in the bumper at Leopardstown, the final race at Leopardstown on Boxing Day, trained by Joseph O'Brien. I thought he ran a really nice race, this Collins. He was heavily backed before the race. He never, obviously, this was a race where most of the horses never had run under rules. And it's often worked out well, this bumper. But Collins was ridden right out the back behind a slow gallop. And just as the pace quickened, just as the protagonist from the midfield started to move forward to try and put the pressure on the leaders and the pace quickened, Collins got stuck right in the middle of a couple of fading horses. He had to be pulled right back, lost all momentum, and then stayed on nicely to take third. He showed a good change of gear that day. He stayed on past beaten horses. I think he's got an abundance of potential, this Collins, and he could be a horse for next time. I think he'd be making it second time lucky wherever Joseph O'Brien sends him. And then, it's my Cheltenham Antipost bet of the year that I've been badgering on about for the last couple of months. The Boss's Oscar. Now, when we're recording this, the Boss's Oscar's only just run. He finished second in the Potemps qualifier at Leopardstown behind Dandy Mag. It was the perfect qualifier and run. You couldn't have asked for any more. He's going to keep it roughly, going to be off the same mark. I just think everything points towards him. I think he's 9-1 for the Potemps now. I'm on healthily Antipost at much bigger prices. I think he'll go off 4-1 favourite on the day. He's the Cheltenham Antipost bet for me. I can't see against him. Anything against him. I know it's a big race, a big field, the Potemps, but he's just a class above. He's a graded horse. He's definitely a graded horse, maybe grade one at his best in next season, maybe. I really like the Boss's Oscar.
You don't say at all. And you just like talking about horses who involve your name. Tom Collins for David Ellsworth not long ago, and now we've got Collins over National Hunt rules. G-Rod, have you got anything flying under the radar?
I wouldn't say flying under the radar, but I thought Killer Clown was absolutely fantastic on Saturday in the Novices Handicap race. Dominant performance in that race, which is usually quite a hot contest. And then you've already said, Maddie, the race won by Royal Pagai yesterday on Sunday at Kempton. That was run at a really, really strong pace throughout. So much so that a horse who really jumps and travels well, the King's Rear, couldn't go to pace and was in trouble a long way out. And he's usually a bold jumping front runner, the King's Rear. So they definitely went a strong pace there. And I thought the front two, certainly the winner who won it on the bridle, Royal Pagai, and the second, Captain Ord, they came well clear of Double Shuffle, who obviously is a good horse around Kempton and a very good yardstick for the form. I'll be very surprised if Royal Pagai and Captain Ord aren't winning races again by the end of the season.
They both look ahead the handicapper, don't they? Or at least they were. And Binfield, to you, what do you think?
St. Calvados was very interesting, Maddie. We cut him from 16-1 to 10-1 for the Ryanair. I thought it was a particularly good effort over 3 miles for the first time. He only lost two places after the last in the King George. So he got beaten in a fag paper by Min in the Ryanair last year. I think he can go one better. One for the pronunciation police, if they're listening. Bit of an obvious one, but Honor de Jonc, who fell at the last for Jane Williams, unlucky against Eros Tussoy of Nicky Henderson's. And then what else have we got? That's it, Maddie, actually, those two.
You've treated us to two of your best there, Vinners. Many thanks. Now, Newbury. They are due to inspect tomorrow morning at 8:30, but fingers crossed they'll get the go-ahead and we can talk about the Challenge Novices Hurdle just after this.
Paddy Power are streaming all UK and Irish racing on our app. No bet required. Just log in and watch. Terms and conditions apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
It's Challenge Novices Hurdle time now, then, a race which has been won by so many fabulous horses down the years. It's a tried and tested route for Paul Nicholls anyway, and he's got another very talented young hurdler in Brave Man's Game going in the race this time around. I believe he's at the top of your market, Paul Binfield.
He is indeed, Maddie. Yes, 15-8 favourite for Brave Man's Game. Then we go 5-2 for Evan Williams, Stargate, who's Evan's having such a brilliant season, as you guys have already touched on. 9-2, does he know? I might as well go throughout the full list as there's only six runners. 5-1, the Glancing Queen. 13-2, Wild About Oscar and the Rag, Haunt Ra at 50-1, with Adrian Heskin on board for Sophie Leach.
Brilliant. I'm really looking forward to this race because there's so many different angles you can take. Stargate is just a fantastic horse. I loved that win at Sandown in the Grade 2 last time out. Does he know? He's proven himself with a couple of excellent performances at Cheltenham. What that form's worth, we don't know. And then it's that old issue again. It's the £7 mare's allowance. The Glancing Queen will, of course, get that £7 from the geldings here. And she was a very impressive winner at Warwick last time as well. What do you do when you look at a race like this, G Rob? Because they're hard to assess given they're all running in different races and bringing different strands of form together.
Yeah, it's a very difficult race because not only that, all of them are open to any amount of improvement. You just don't know how good they are. A lot of them are coming in after only one or two runs over hurdles, could make huge leaps of improvement, could go backwards. You just don't know what could happen. But you can only go on what you've seen so far. And on what we've seen so far, Brave Man's Game and Stargate look the two outstanding horses in the race. Brave Man's Game was obviously wildly impressive over the course and distance last time. But Stargate, similarly so at Sandown, winning that Winter Novices Hurdle, which is always a good race every year on the Friday of the Tingle Creek. I think that race has thrown up three winners of this race in the last 10 years, plus a bunch more before that. And he couldn't have done it any easier, Stargate, could he, at Sandown? Evan Williams is a notably serene sort of character, isn't he? But yet, even he was struggling to keep a lid on the excitement that Stargate was giving him after he won at Sandown. And like everyone on this podcast, by the sounds of it, I do like Evan Williams for the simple reason that he's a real no-nonsense sort of character, isn't he? And when he tells you one that he thinks is good, you certainly do sit up and listen. So I would probably back Stargate to turn over Brave Man's Game, but I can't wait to see them both run.
I can't wait either. Interestingly, on official ratings, both Does He Know and Brave Man's Game are on 143 and Stargate is on 147. So that would certainly support your argument, G-Rod. I'm just having a look. Probably get a collective groan from the people listening now. But it's quite interesting that the top two in the market, the first one's by Brave Man Sonien and Stargate's by Imperial Monarch. So two sires that we haven't heard all that much about in the jumps game just yet. Maybe they could be ones to watch going forward. Does He Know by Alcacet as well. So some lesser known names there. And then you get down to the Glancing Queen, who is by Jeremy, and Wild About Oscar, who is by Oscar. They need no introduction. TC, I can see the Glancing Queen. We were talking about this before we went live to a couple of Racing Post colleagues, and one person in particular is a big fan of this mare. Do you think she's going to be competitive getting that weight?
Well, the weight allowance is clearly a huge plus, isn't it, for mares? We've already seen it to great success this season. I don't know. I don't think she's perhaps good enough to tackle these kind of improving sorts. I mean, Stargate and Brave Man's Game both look really good, like very smart. I think Does He Know will be better suited to the likes of Cheltenham, where he's won his last two starts. He's more of a grinder than a speedy horse. The Glancing Queen, her best RPR is 127, which she posted in a mare's novice hurdle last time at Warwick. Stargate posted 146 last time at Sandown. I mean, there's a huge difference there. I know she gets £7, but she's going to have to improve a great deal to challenge the likes of Stargate, who he's probably open to the most improvement. I know Brave Man's Game's only had one start over this trip, and he was very impressive last time out. But Stargate, he just seems to have everything. I think he could be a real smart horse, and I know he's unbeaten, and people get, you know, swayed by the fact that there's three ones next to his name. But he's just very impressive. Like, he's visually impressive, the way he handles all kinds of ground. He won his point on yielding. He won last time on very testing conditions at Sandown. He has a turn of foot that suggests that he could go well in on quicken conditions too. And I think he should be favourite. I don't know why he's not favourite in here. And potentially it's the Evan Williams angle compared to Paul Nicholls, who obviously farms these kinds of races. But I'm really excited by Stargate. And I really hope he does win this race.
Do you know what? I think that's three votes for Stargate then. We all absolutely love him. From one grade one to another, now let's talk about the Neville Hotels Novice Chase. That's over at Leopardstown at 1:50 tomorrow. And this sees another rivalry reshaped again, I suppose you could say, between Monkfish and Latest Exhibition, just a neck between them in the Albert Bartlett last year. And you've also got Conflated, who was hugely impressive last time in there as well. Binners, just run us through your market.
Well, Maddie, we go 4-7 Monkfish, 100-30 Conflated, 9-2 Latest Exhibition, trying to get back on track after a defeat at Punchestown, 10-1 Eurobot, and it's 50-1 the other two.
And Monkfish, he's been dubbed as a huge, what was the RSA hope for the next year's Cheltenham Festival. Did you think there were any negatives to take from his chasing debut at Fairy House TC, or were you pretty impressed?
No, I was impressed. I thought he was very good. He barely came off the bridle that day, Monkfish, and the step up to 3 miles certainly won't cause him any issues. I mean, that win at Cheltenham in March in the Albert Bartlett, he was actually at his best in the final 50 yards when he regained the lead after looking beat over 3 miles, and the step up and triple definitely suit him. And his rivals, like Conflated, is promising for Gordon Elliott, but he's been beaten a fair few times. Like, I know he's improving, but he's only 3-14 under rules. He's clearly not an absolute superstar, although he has bumped into the likes of Astir and Falange, Envoy Hélène, etc. Darvastar, who I'm you know, ashamed to mention his name after being over him the other day, and he lost me a lot of money and pride on Twitter. But yeah, he's bumped into some smart sorts, Conflated, but I don't think he'll fend off Monkfish. And Latest Exhibition, what happened last time? I mean, he lost his position. He looked a bit one pace. He didn't jump very well. He hasn't jumped very well in either chase start. And Monkfish obviously beat him in the Albert Bartlett, but Monkfish looks better for fences, whereas Latest Exhibition looks worse. So I think it's hard to take on the jolly in this race, though I would like to see an improved effort from Paul Nolan's charge, Latest Exhibition. I think he looked really promising last year, didn't he? And maybe it was the quick turnaround, 18 days since his chasing debut. Last year, when he had a quick turnaround, I think it was 15 days from his hurdling debut until he ran next time at Navan. He also lost that time as well, although it was behind Abracadabra. He got beaten that day. So maybe it's a quick turnaround. He's had a month and a half off since, so we might be able to see a better performance this time. But to beat Monkfish, it would take a huge improvement, huge improved effort, I think. This horse looks smart.
That's an interesting theory on Latest Exhibition. I wonder if, depending on how he runs tomorrow, they maybe could go back over hurdles with him. We know that Albert Bartlett form's worked out well with Time Hill doing very well this year. G-Rod Monkfish, what did you make of his Cheltenham win last year? Because it was quite a backwards performance in a way. It looked like he was vulnerable and then he fought back in the closing stages, as TC said.
Yeah, no, I think he looks very good, doesn't he? That race looks a strong race. Let's be fair. I mean, Time Hill has gone on, obviously, to the run Posey Park very, very close in the long walk. Obviously, beat him at Newbury, getting £3 previously. And he was, I thought, well held in the end by Monkfish. And Monkfish jumped very, very well first time out when he won. So I think he's the most likely winner, but it is the sort of horse that I do like to take on, you know. You really...
Here we go.
Well, you're looking at one race, aren't you? You know, I know that he's got the best form and over hurdles, but you're only dealing with one piece of form over fences. And I always think, well, you can never quite be sure whether a horse is going to go on and improve from that performance or whether a horse is going to take a backward step from that improvement. Now, I find that the majority of punters, often they look at it and they think, oh, Monkfish, yeah, was great. He'll take a big step next time and improve again. But that doesn't always happen, you know. There's like almost a bias there. People like to think the horses will go on and make a jump and will go on and improve next time. But because they like to think it, they often do think it. And then that is often shown up in the market, as you'll probably see when Monkfish goes off at a short price. But there is every chance that something could improve past him. Obviously, they're all coming in lightly raced. You don't know how good any of them are. And you just, for me, you never want to be taking a short price about a horse. Really, his price is going to be based mainly on that run last time out at Fairy House, when yes, he did look very good, but is he going to improve or is he going to go backwards?
And who would you take him on with, or would you just not be a player on that race?
Well, I he's going to be a layable price if you want to take him on the exchange, isn't he? But I mean, you'd have to be looking at Eurobot. I think is a fairly big price judged on his impressive victory over fences at Furness last time. I mean, he's a double figure price. You know, Monkfish is priced up around what I think Paddy Power going 4-7 shot. I mean, for me, he's not a 4-7 shot. I think he is the most likely winner. Don't get me wrong. It's the same as Epitome the other day. She was the most likely winner. Monkfish is the most likely winner here. But do you think Monkfish would win, what, are we talking 2 out of every 3 of these races? I'm not sure he would.
Okay. So from one race that perhaps isn't the most competitive to a race which definitely is, or at least in my view anyway, which is at 2:25, is the Matheson Hurdle. And we see the rematch here between Samoa and Abacadabras. I think the former is just hedging the bets in the market at the moment. Then we go down to Aspire Tower, who beat Abacadabras, of course, at Down Royal. Then Sharjah and Saldier, both in Susanna Ritchie's Silks, Beacon Edge, Petit Mouchoir and Curse of Bleem. This is another really interesting race, which is going to have ramifications on the Champion Hurdle market. Binners, just clarify those prices for us.
Yeah, tight at the top of the market. Maddie St. Ra, 7-4 favourite. Abacadabra, 9-4. 4-1 Aspire Tower. Sharjah, I think, has won the last two renewals of this. 15-2. 10-1 Saudier, 16-1. Beacon Edge and Petit Mouchoir. And it's 35-1 Curse of Bleem.
I'm just having a look down here, and I can't help but think Sharjah is got to be a good price here. He's rated 164. Do we think that San Juan Abacadabras are better than that? What do you think, TC?
I'm not too sure. Like, there isn't much separating San Juan and Abacadabra. They're very unexposed, both of them. Abacadabra was obviously the better hurdler. And there's only, I think, a pound separating them. Their official ratings now, they're running off level weights. Abacadabra gets first time tongue tie. He obviously beat Samoa last time, but the whole of social media was saying that Samoa was a better horse that day. I know he got hammered at a crucial stage, but he still didn't get past Abacadabra. I don't think there's much separating them, but do they deserve to be that short in the market? Probably not. There's some classy horses against them. I think Saldier is the one of the two Mullins, Rich Ritchie horses. Maybe not. I know Sharjah's won the last couple of renewals, but I have this thing for Saldier. I don't know what it is. I love this horse. I just think he's a top-class horse. He just hasn't had the rub of the green through his career. I know he's a six-year-old now. He feels like he's about a nine-year-old. He feels like he's been around for ages. But he's only had two runs in like the last 32 months, I think. He's had an injury-hit campaign. He just looks so promising when he won the champion four-year-old hurdle at Punchestown in April 2018. He beat Mr. Adjudicator that day. He's also trained by Willie Mullins. And then he was seen at Nace, and he fell against Espoir Dalen under Ruby Walsh. And he looked like beating Espoir Dalen that day. And we've seen what Espoir Dalen's done since. He obviously won the champion hurdle. We saw last time he goes well off a break. After a year off, he won the 2019 Morgiana. He beat Petit Mouchoir, who's obviously in this field. He's not the horse of old, so I don't think he's a contender this year. But Saldier just goes so well off a break. I know he's only run twice in 32 months. But he's the classiest horse in the field, I think, at his best. If he could just have a clear run of things. He's only had 6 starts over hurdles. 6 starts, that's it. He just feels like he's been around for ages. He should be coming here off the back of 3 wins, 2 in Grade 1 company, 10-1. Paul Townend has chosen him. I just think he's a great bet against a number of horses who just, like Aspire Tower, can you really back him? I don't know, he's getting £3, but he's a four-year-old against proven horses. I know he beat Abacadabra at Down Royal, but that horse clearly didn't run his best race. Gordon Elliott didn't have him primed for that day. Abacadabra, first-time tongue-tie. He was questionable last time. I think Saldier is the bet in the race, especially if the flat 8 runners go to post.
Okay. How do you think the race is going to be run? Because you mentioned Abacadabra. He's been known for pulling himself up in front. Perhaps that's putting it kindly. We'll see if the tongue tie has an impact on that. Aspire Tower tends to go forward. Petit Mouchoir tends to go forward. Curse of Bleem stalks. Maybe, do you think Samoa could end up getting in trouble again if Mark Walsh isn't careful?
Well, potentially. I mean, as you say, you've got Aspartal, who's definitely going to go forward, and Petit Michoud won't be far away. They'll go a reasonable clip, I imagine, and the likes of Saudia and Sharjah will be held up out the back. Abacadabra probably in mid-pack with Samoa. I imagine Mark Walsh will be thinking to himself, do not get into trouble. Like last time, potentially cost him the race, the fact that he got in, hampered round in the home bend and in the straight. He'll be thinking, please don't get into trouble. I might be on a decent horse here. But his form, like his actual winning form, I know he won at Cheltenham. He beat Aramon in the county hurdle. But he's only ever won a grade three, two grade threes of that, although the Tipperary one in October was barely a race. Like he's against proper grade one horses in here. Like Abacadabra's proven at the top level. Sharjah, obviously. Saudia as well. I don't know. He's very short, isn't he? People are backing him on potential. I think he'll be another one. I'm sure Giroud will. Well, I'm hoping Giroud will confirm this theory that Giroud will want to take on. I think he's potentially a vulnerable favourite out in front.
I agree. I think the market has this all wrong. Do you agree, Giroud?
Yeah, I think that you summed it up very well, both of you. I thought that TC made a very strong case for Saudia, and I certainly wouldn't disagree. The price for Samoa, for me, is based purely on reputation, hype, and talk, which is the sort of thing that I like to oppose. Couldn't be having him on my mind at that sort of price. I mean, he couldn't even beat Abracadabra last time. Yeah, whatever. Maybe he was a little bit unlucky. But Abracadabras and St. Roy, they aren't the best horses in the race, are they, Maddie? You said it yourself. I mean, that's purely on what we've seen. And, you know, we don't have insight into stables. We can only go purely on what we've seen. That's purely on what we've seen. I mean, Sharjah is the best horse in the race. Saudia is right there on form with Abracadabra and Saint Ra. And yet those two are going to be, what, three, four, five times the prices of Saint Ra and Abracadabra. So it's a bit of a no-brainer as a punter, isn't it? It's a good race for a bet.
That's what we like to hear. It's been a cracking couple of days, hasn't it? And there's so much more to come. But before we leave you, Paul Binfield, you have news, your millionaire bonus. How are things shaping up?
Shaping up really well, Maddie. It's been a tremendous promotion. We've had the six qualifiers now, the six winners of those heats go into the final at Cheltenham on New Year's Day, the Paddy Power Millionaire Handicap Chase. It was the brainchild of Alan Byrne, one of our Irish traders and our marketing gurus. We've priced the race up now. The one I like it is Good Boy Bobby for Nigel Twist and Davis. He's won, the trainer has won three of the last seven renewals. Good Boy Bobby was fourth in the Caspian Caviar. I think he's a bit better than that. He's been dropped a couple of pounds by the handicapper. Whether he'll win or not, I don't know, Maddie. But one thing I do know is that one of our customers will be trousering £1 million on New Year's Day.
Fantastic. And that Cheltenham meeting is brilliant, isn't it? No better way to see in the new year. And then we have Sandown's Tolworth meeting on Saturday. So even more grade ones to come. Make sure you look out for Friday's show, where the team will be giving you all their tips and advice for the weekend's action. But until then,
Paddy
we'll say goodbye.
Paddy Power Games has over 250 of your favourites to play online, and we're going to attempt to name them all in this 10-second ad before the T's and C's kick in. There's Blackjack, 18+, bgambleaware.org.